Today is to non-Gaussianity, apart from the title. To generalize the question of non-Gaussian estimators in the following regime. So if we look at the understanding of what once you become non-Gaussian, life can very quickly become very difficult. And I think there's been some very good progress made over the last probably 10 years to understand various special forms of non-Gaussianity. And here I just want to discuss how much we know and how far we can take this and what we think the regimes are for some statistics, it's all statistics questions, and how much statistics we need to know. I think one of the early successes, at least theoretical, of writing down non-Gaussian effects was CMB lensing. Even that's again only recently been detected by Kendrick and company. But certainly the theory there was very rapidly understood that you could write down an optimal estimator, in principle at least, to find some piece of information in a small perturbation of Gaussian map. Remember, the way it works is in the CMB you measure a two-point function, and you want to measure the noise of it is given by a four-point function. And if you understand the four-point function perfectly, you can measure small perturbation to the two-point function, which is what lensing does. It generates local anisotropy, two-point function. Taking this to the next level, the FNL calculation is in many ways analogous. You take a leading order, a correction, or in this case it's a bit easier or harder, depending on which way you want to measure it. That you get a leading, you get the Gaussian piece has no.
Sorry, man.
Okay, I'm going to put this down before I kill somebody. If anybody doesn't have a nose, walking sticks are potentially dangerous.
Objects. And in the case of FNL, the starting point is a three-point function, which is zero for Gaussian random fields. And optimality, to talk about optimality, you need to know the six-point function to measure the optimal configuration of three points. And again, it is doable because it is a small perturbation, and the six-point is dominated by the Gaussian piece. And as I say, so these have been solved, and they have been, and in fact, it turns out the solution is, I think surprisingly simple, given that the thing looks a little bit messy to start with, that there actually exists optimal estimators, which, as people like Ben have shown, actually computationally not all that hard. You don't actually have to go through and measure all possible permutations, which, of these things, which could in principle be very complex. And you can ask, well, can we generalize this? Not obviously, you could generalize various things. You could go to the 4 plus 8 point function and so on. In fact, I was thinking of whether this is useful for the FNL calculation. You could try to take the whole hierarchy up to all orders. A quick estimate: I estimated that if you did all endpoints on the CMB and you had an infinite computer and were infinitely smart and reduced them all, then you might gain about 20% in your error bar. That's my rough estimate. So your error bar would go from 20 to, I don't know, 15 or something. Maybe. That's an order of magnitude estimate as to how much information there might be in the sum of all moments, but that would be a lot of work. Okay, now, the question I want to look at is the error on the 4 points. Okay, what happens when this is not weakly non-Gaussian, so these two regimes are all solvable when the leading order effect is small and the covariance, the weighting of the error matrix is still fully Gaussian. If you move out of that regime, for example, if the first leading moment already becomes not entirely negligible, then you have to worry about the 4, 6, whatever point function you're looking at, becoming non-Gaussian as well. And of course, these functions can very quickly become very complicated. The question is this really, how out of control is this? The reason we've been thinking about that is because it gives you limiting steps to how far you can go in getting information out. So one thing, well, let me just finish this slide. It has been proposed that we can, in principle, make amazing surveys of the sky, that you can measure, in principle, 10 to the 18 nodes and 21 centimeter structure. You can measure all the cosmological parameters to 9 significant digits or more. that's been the promise of various papers by theorists like myself who have just gone crazy on trying to mine what you can get out of the universe. However, if you look back a few years of what was forecast for today's surveys, people are slowly scaling back of how much we really are able to get out of existing surveys. So why is it that in reality, WMAP 5, if you look at a beautiful paper, but in order to make the results robust, they only use a tiny fraction of the information in the galaxy surveys. They only use the BAO signal. Even though the number of modes in SDS or 2DF is actually very large, these guys measure, you know, tens of thousands of modes, but only some very special combination of these modes was used because their modes are large and the error bars are poorly understood. Okay, you lead to systematic error bars, and if you can't really quantify them perfectly, it's not quite clear what you have learned. So the exercise here is to ask, well, can we understand those things better? How can we understand non-Gaussian errors better to maybe be able to mine more information out of existing surveys and to be able to push this further in the future? Of course, we know that the CMB, which has been, you know, certainly the ultimate success in cosmology, it has a fundamental limit of around, well, rough order of magnitude, of about a million modes in the sky, if I take a factor of 10. I mean, it's still a small number compared to the 10 to the 18, okay? That's what I'm going to say here. Nine is much smaller than, 6 is much smaller than 18 modes, and 10 to the 18 modes. And the information content is really one of a wood end. So the limiting information content you'll ever get out of CMB is around a part in a thousand. It's very impressive that, you know, all these parameters have pretty much been, like FNL, has been pretty much pushed to these kinds of limits. Okay, so the limit that we have of about 100 is about 10 minus 3 of the leading order statistical error. Now, of course, there's been a big push to try to push, you know, open up the parameter space, have more parameters, dark energy, dynamical evolution. And then the question is, what is needed? How much do you have to understand about these things? Because almost all the proposals want to work with things that are Sloan-like, so galaxies, things you don't understand perfectly a priori, lensing, 21 centimeter, all these things that are nonlinear, potentially messy, that if understood perfectly could get you a lot of information. And here the question is, what do we need to understand this, and how can we quantify it? Of course, there are other applications of these problems. For example, as I said, CMB lensing, or lensing in general, is a non-Gaussian estimator applied to a almost Gaussian random field. Here's oscillations. People have talked about finding cosmic strings. Can that be done in an optimal way? Can we generalize this question of non-Gaussianity? So different types of questions you can ask. So the conference here is about how can you tell if a field is non-Gaussian, what the implications there are. What I'm really asking is, once you know it's non-Gaussian, life gets a lot more complicated very quickly, even for the statistics you started up with, because you can't ignore the non-Gaussianity in the term itself, and this, as I said, impacts a lot of things. Okay. More, a bit of background of what has been done. I think an interesting paper I thought was Rimes and Hamilton, who showed that in an n-body simulation, in fact, the Fisher information is a lot smaller than one might have thought and saturates much earlier, at much more linear scales than you might have thought. I'll show you a quantitative plot of that a little bit later. But that's where I started, you know, that's one of the reasons why, first of all, the question is how do you interpret it, and second of all, is information there in the first place? And this led rise to another question, which is, for example, cosmic shear, gravitational lensing by dark matter, is often thought to open up the window to precision cosmology, and there's still caveats. Now, this is a very clean problem in principle, because in principle you can calculate this thing to a very high precision in an n-body simulation. But are there nonlinear effects that you haven't fully understood yet? And that's, it turns out these questions are all related, meaning that if a pure n-body simulation has less information than you thought, which seems surprising, could it be that lensing has less information than you might think because of non-Gaussian effects? And the whole point is that you have to understand 2 and 4 point statistics at some level. So a very quick review as to how the general, a very large class of cosmology estimation is just done. Okay, so this is where we get almost all, except for supernovas probably, where we get the way that we get almost all information, is we measure something, CMB, galaxy surveys, something else. We define them 2-point statistic on this data set. Okay. And then we have, we want to know some cosmological parameter, say omega, W, I don't know, kappa, some number you want to actually derive from the from something you've measured. And usually that's done through a 2-point statistic. So you first take pairs of data points, then you differentiate this pair of data points to the parameter you want to know about, and you ask how much does this vary. And of course, the variant of that depends on this, the correlation of this guy, which is a 4-point moment on your underlying data. And and you can do this to understand it, just understand. Of course, you can be fancy and do MCMCs and stuff like that, but just understand where the information really is. Let's start with just a linear expansion around pivot points. And again, there are some technical things, but this is close to the best, you know, at least gives you an idea as to what the best is that you can do. If the fishy information isn't there, you probably will not get it by some other fancy way either. These tend to be already highly optimistic, optimistic scenarios. Now, let's see. If you have non-Gaussian sources, well, of course, then the information could be buried elsewhere. In the Gaussian source, the reason we do that is because in the Gaussian source, there is no more information. The 2-point is all there is, and there's no, it's a waste of time to look at any other moment. If the sources are non-Gaussian, there could be more information in them. But let's reduce the space of, as I said, for SNL, for example, I estimated there actually isn't all that much more in the higher order moments when you add, even if you could add them all up and compute them all. So let's still look at the 2-point moment of a non-Gaussian random field. That's still a well-defined procedure. It may, again, not extract all the information, but some of it certainly. But it means that the errors on your estimators, or even the optimality of your estimators, is no longer given by something I can write down on a piece of paper anymore, of the weak expansion of a 4-point moment on my original field. You need to get the covariance of your variance from something else. This immediately, the reason this isn't done very often, not very popular, is because a 4-point of a non-Gaussian object just looks like it has a lot of dimensions. It looks like it's not something you would just want to, you know, do over breakfast. So unless you have a student who's very bored, you tend to just wave your hand and hope that it's actually easier than it might be. And I'm not going to go into even higher, using 4-point is messy, you know, try 6-point, 8-point, you know, this very quickly gets even more messy. So let's not go there. So this is just a summary of just the standard procedure that we do. It's very straightforward. You have some vector of parameters you want to know. For example, W primes, omegas, anything else it might be, anything you might be interested in, write it as a vector. Then you have something you observe. You observe a power spectrum or some 2-point statistic. It's just meant to be some statistic. You have some number of K modes. K is a label of, you know, the number of modes that you have seen. And you expand this as a Taylor expansion relative to some pivot in your vector. And there's some noise in your measurement. The noise can be either due to measurement noise, like thermal noise in WMAP, or it can be due to errors, intrinsic errors in your statistical field. Okay, so N has variations coming both from the intrinsic variation of P and any kind of statistical measurement error. You can write it as a matrix equation. This is a 2x2 matrix. This is a vector, so you have some linear equation relating W to Y. If you know this as the 2-point statistic of N, then you can write the minimum variance estimator of W, just the least squares problem. So this is just a completely straightforward least square statistics problem, nothing magic in here. And you can, from that, you can know the errors in your parameters by knowing just some things. The one thing, the only thing you really need to know, that's probably pretty simple, is the noise covariance matrix of your quadratic function. Yes?
Then what you get out from this might depend strongly on the pivot you choose.
It could, yes. So this is this assumes that your displacement is small and the higher order terms in here don't come back to affect you. So then, if you want to do, if you, yeah, this is already a very simplified problem. But let's try and see how bad this is, and then of course the closing you'd have to do something more fancy to, if you have higher order terms and W, then this thing is not small anymore, and things could be could change dramatically, yes. But this is still a, in the limit that this is small, this at least is a discussable problem, and let's see how solvable it actually is.
Let's see, I mean, actually, for example, you know, if you have something that depends on the square of your parameter, just that. If it's an amplitude, let's say the whole thing scales up and down with the square of your parameter. You get, obviously, you can construct a situation where you can, might lead, I mean, your conclusion might be that you have no information about that, even though it's clearly wrong. Because if you just you take the pivot as the zero, you know, you find that.
Yes, of course. I mean, there are lots of details, lots of devils and lots of details in this argument. However, this is, I think, this is the standard thing that we do. So, and there are things we can actually learn at this level. I think these things, some of them can be addressed in this framework, some cannot, but I don't think it changes the overall picture of what I'm trying to get into here.
What I want to talk about is this object here, F. I call it F. I don't know why. Of k and k prime, which is you need to know the covariance of some quadratic function. And we know that the quadratic function p of k for a stationary field, it doesn't have to be Gaussian, can only depend on the magnitude of k. Okay, that requires statistical, stationarity, and does not require Gaussianity. So these guys can only be a function of the magnitude and cannot depend in more complex ways, even if you're non-Gaussian. However, the covariance of those two could be more complicated. The covariance could depend not just on these two vectors, but also on the angle between them. Okay, so in general, the most general allowed scenario is that this f depends on k, k prime, and the angle between k and k prime. That's the most general thing that this could possibly depend on. For Gaussian random field, of course, we know this only depends, this is zero when k is not equal to k prime, so this is a very simple diagonal matrix. For a Gaussian source, non-Gaussian case, somebody's got to measure, tell you what this whole function is, and then you can proceed with your with the rest of the story. Now, the important thing that the simplification, the first simplification that we can make, is that this is a correlation function of k. Okay, a correlation function of k depends on the lag between two vectors, and of course we know that the diagonal frame, if you diagonalize this covariance or correlation function. This diagonalizes the correct eigenspace for this is a Legendre transform. We're supposed to do a Legendre transform on the angle between these two vectors. And this thing is really diagonal in the space k, k prime, and L, with L as the Legendre moment corresponding to this transform. And again, for Gaussians, if you have a delta function here, all the moments are the same. Every L is the same as every other, and you don't need to do any more calculations. Some people tell you what f, k, k prime is, you're done. In general, you would have to measure what it is for other values of L. But that's it, okay? This is all you need to know to quantify your full non-Gaussian impact on your optimal here meaning minimum variance, estimate of anything you want. So this is the end of the story. So it's not infinitely complicated. You only need to know a handful of numbers, not some six-dimensional space as you might worry it might be if you had to know some large number of triangle configurations. So the good news is that this space is, and that you need to know about is not the full space, and in fact, you can actually write down the diagonal space of it, and you're done. Measure that in the simulation, propagate, and that's it. Now, I'm not going to go into too many technical gory details. It turns out once you want to project things out, for example, if you do a weak lensing calculation, that depends on the projection of the power spectrum. It'll depend on k's at different angles to each other. It turns out just the way projections work, it tends to be that you tend to only need L equal to 0 and L equal to 2. The other ones, depends on the statistics, but it turns out the higher order L's, you don't tend to need to know for most types of observations that have been proposed. So the good news is there's not really all that much more in a non-Gaussian field than in a Gaussian field. You don't have to go out and all of a sudden measure, you know, six-dimensional functions or something complicated like that. You know, the understanding can be restricted to just two functions of two variables. And people have done that. And this is the Rimes and Hamilton paper where they plot, for example, here's a quantification of how much information there is in an n-body simulation. And again, normally, if it's a Gaussian, what you would do is you would say, okay, as I go to higher k, I count how many modes I have. My information is equal to the number of modes. So in Sloan, you know, we can measure maybe you can measure scales down to, you know, signals of noise of better than one, probably down to a k of 10 or something. This is, you know, Sloan has, can measure the huge k, so you can principle measure all the way out here somewhere is where they can measure. Okay, information there is enormous. Number of modes you could have is very large with Sloan. You know, you basically have a million galaxies. Information starts at a million. And you can ask, well, where are we stuck? It turns out, even before you do anything nonlinear or complicated, just go and measure power spectrum and keep doing that and ask how much does the power spectrum vary in a simulation when you subsample such a thing. And it turns out the variance in the power spectrum amplitude actually saturates the information. So you cannot measure even your power spectrum, even just the overall amplitude of your power spectrum, to better than 10 to minus 3 in this case. Okay, so even not knowing anything about how these things, how these galaxies form, how they come about, the intrinsic correlation between modes is large. And again, there have been discussions of why that is, but that is the way it is. And basically, what it says that even at fairly linear scale, so if you ask, you know, if I treat it as Gaussian, what k should I be going to? Look at these plateaus, and it's about like 0.2 is basically the highest k you can go to for a Gaussian equivalent field, and that's the information. That's all the information you're going to get out of this survey. So surveys have only that much information. I think it's a very high k, but you see, once you get really nonlinear, life gets really complicated for other reasons. So you can think of, you know, this plateau. It turns over again, but first of all, it's already two or three orders of magnitude less than the Gaussian lines. Information is already severely diminished, and not to mention needing to understand your nonlinear processes to know this partial p, partial, whatever.
Why it goes up again? Yeah. Well, people say you should start seeing substructure with kind of random distributors, so at least you can measure. I mean, I think that's a question of, can I measure the power spectrum? Not the same question as saying, do you know what it means? So yes, you can measure. It says, yes, if I simulate one simulation again, I can measure the high K modes a little bit better than the lower ones. Yes?
How sensitive is that turnover to saturation to tip? I mean, if you have a very blue or very red tip in the power spectrum?
I don't know. I don't know how exhaustively people have studied this. This is a qualitative, this is, I think, for a very standard WMAP type 3 type model or even earlier type model. When they look at it, one can certainly in the framework of nonlinear statistics play a much wider parameter spaces. Nihilik might have done a bit more, but I don't know the answer.
I think you can quantify by looking at where delta squared, which is the sort of normalization independent, reaches a certain value. So when you change n, when you change sigma a, you just look at what k reaches a certain value. So you should call it on the. Yeah.
But I think it's pretty generic. It's just a function of the nonlinear scale.
Basically, yeah.
It's like delta squared between 1 and 1,000 or something.
No, like 0.1.
Yeah.
Okay. No, exactly. So it starts very early. It starts much earlier than you would like it to. So that's why it's such a huge deal that this thing starts being a problem. Yes.
Sorry, because I'm lost at one point, and I would really like to understand it. What sets the scale at the beginning of the plateau? Is this pure mathematics, or is it the physics of the system you're looking at?
It's the physics of the system. It is running n-body simulation, and that's when nonlinear effects start making these statistics non-Gaussian and making your modes correlated with each other. I mean, the modes of the power spectrum correlated with each other.
So what are the parameters which determine the onset of the plateau?
Well, initially, people think it's just nonlinearity, that when you have a nonlinear parameter, which normally people say is equal to 1, obviously things happen. This is a quantification of what happens. This actually happens at about 0.1 or so is when this starts turning.
Or something like that. Sorry? It's 0.3, right? If I remember right, the normalization at the 0.1, that's about 0.3. So, and it turns out the 0.1. So.
Whatever. It's a number that you measure. The interpretation, so Nihilik and company say this is because of Poisson noise dominating. So it's what they call one halo term, Poisson noise, they think. Is a noise which causes you that as you go to smaller scales, you have a fixed number of halos, so you just keep sampling the same halos again. But what it says is, if I give you a coarse resolution map, looking at any higher resolution doesn't get you any more information. That's the short of it. What this measurement says, what measurement on a simulation.
Okay.
would suggest. So we applied the same thing to gravitational lensing.
And here as a function of L, you can ask, well, if the dark matter information just saturates, then does that mean that you can really not learn very much from lensing, which again, all it does is it matches the dark matter power spectrum. And if that didn't carry any information by itself, then why would lensing, which measures the exact same thing in projection, but again, the spatial matrices, when they project, they don't really change. I mean, this is not projection, this is just k equal to zero. So this is a mode which is just a slice of the previous one. Why should that change? And then we tested this, and it turns out there are some numerical effects which tend to make you systematically underestimate the covariance of powers. And that's because if you have a small number of simulations from which you oversample your lensing slices, just a very technical problem, you tend to have correlated volumes which have less scatter. Okay, so your systematic effect goes only in one direction, that under simulating it. So if you simulate the volume smaller than your Hubble volume, you'll end up under sampling your mode. It always systematically underestimates how much error you have. Okay, so as you go from one simulation to 22, number of simulations that go into the projection, you start seeing this exact same nonlinear plateau in the saturation of the power spectrum. So if the power spectrum is not measurable, then you're not going to measure anything else that's based on the power spectrum. Okay, so you're not going to do better than this in anything that's derived from it. You could do worse because the thing you're measuring could be degenerate with other things. But you're not going to do better. This is it. Whatever you cannot measure a derivative of that. Or something derived from that to any more accuracy than this. So this already has some implications, that from just some very straightforward calculations on the dark matter, a very special version of the four-point function is all you need to see that, you know, where should your lensing survey be? So the dotted line here is, for example, with a legacy noise limit of weak lensing. And there already you see the factor of a few non-optimal because of non-Gaussianity. And in some sense, you see, yes, when you're moving the saturated regime, you can pay a lot of money to go and measure a lot of modes which don't carry a lot of information. Okay, so in some sense, you're better off looking at more of the sky than trying to go deeper, because going deep, going to smaller scales doesn't gain you nearly as fast as just having more sky. So this would say at any L bigger than about 500, you're better off going to more sky than going deeper. This is just the basic, this comes from information saturation. And sure, as you go to very high L, you might gain again. But first of all, physics gets very nonlinear and very tricky. So I wouldn't advocate going to L of 10 to the 4 or above. And I don't think anybody really does advocate that. But whatever you do, you're still sitting, you know, two orders of magnitude above the Gaussian line, which you could have stuck with if you stayed at low L. It starts off reasonably Gaussian in these models. The reason for that is, again, you can plot this. This is one of Rimes and Hamilton first plotted this, and all you do is you plot the covariance, the cross-correlation coefficient of CL against CL prime. You can see that the cross-correlation coefficient is 1 on the diagonal. For a Gaussian field, it's 0 everywhere else. And for the non-Gaussian field, you can see what happens is that modes get correlated with each other, which is what pulls the information out of your data. So your data only has information if you have a lot of uncorrelated points, and correlating them is a bad thing for getting information out. So that's the basic statistical origin of this. Okay, now this is, I'm dividing lensing into two types of noises. The first type is just the dark matter that you're lensing. Well, that has these statistical problems. So then that's something that's hard to beat down, okay? So they are correlations. Here's another application of things that have been proposed to measure and to do lensing. So, yes?
Yes. Is it possible to find some, locate this into, and find some set of correlated items, some sort of piece of analysis, and then use those modes to say?
Yes, but that's the same statement. I mean, the information content is basis invariant. And it's quicker computationally. It's much quicker to go into this eigenmode. In fact, you know, to describe a completely correlated matrix, you only need one vector, the rest is zero. So in fact, so this matrix is not hard to describe. You just need a few of these eigenmodes. You don't need to describe something really complicated. And of course, in the Gaussian regime, you're diagonal, and then you become non-diagonal. So yes, that's the way that you might want to calculate this in practice. The information quantum doesn't depend on which basis you choose. And it has been proposed by various people that
high redshift, for example, 21 centimeter radiation, could be used as sources for gravitational lensing. Okay, so the previous one is just no matter what you use as source, that's a limiting thing. Here's considering a specific source, which is large scale structure at a redshift of 2, I think, in this case, as the source of way of lensing. So instead of measuring individual galaxies, just measuring large scale structure, the same problem has been calculated by Oliver Zahn and Matthias Valderiaga for sources at redshift 10. So, and again, there, it's always looked very promising because people say there are these huge numbers of large scale structure modes on the sky. You can do anything, lensing and anything else, to really high statistical accuracy. Here is the equivalent noise that you get, and you see as you go to higher L, your noise goes down, but it tends to saturate. Okay, this is a fairly universal phenomenon that whatever sources you use, they're only good up to some L. And in this particular case, it saturates at the same kind of angular scale as the lenses themselves. So again, you could do better on this by going to higher redshift, but it doesn't really matter because both the sources and the lenses have information saturation. Good. So this is the last slide. So it says that this non-Gaussian quadratic estimation is actually solvable. It means that you have to measure something out of a simulation, and that's the only thing you really need out of the simulation. You don't really need to, at least at the Fisher level, you don't need to do something very fancy. You just need to measure a power spectrum and the covariance of this power spectrum of k, k prime, and a few L, not even a large number of them. I think you will only typically need one or two. So this problem is actually tractable, and that's really the way one should really do it. So yes, there are two matrices, there are really typically two that you need on a bad day, maybe more depending on what you're measuring, but typically this is all you need. And yes, you can do PCAs to reduce the amount of information. And the preliminary application of this to many of the surveys shows that one has to be careful that these non-Gaussian effects can enter. They could impact how much you learn from them. Information content tends to always go in the direction that you have less information than a Gaussian source. I haven't found an example yet of a non-Gaussian source which has more information. Hypothetically, it's possible, but I haven't found such an example yet. And that, yes, future surveys, they probably still have a lot of information, but maybe not quite as many as 10 to the 18. Let's see. That's my conclusion.
We're working on that, hopefully. Next week, we'll have an answer.
Sato.
So this is the information content in the power spectrum, right?
Yes.
But when you go to nonlinear scales, when you become non-Gaussian, there's also information in the 3-point and the 4-point,
yes,
right, that you can actually measure.
In principle,
that's,
yes,
independent. Those things might capture independent information, right?
Yes. There certainly could be more information in,
yes,
that. I did look a bit at the lensing case of the 3-point moments, and whose error are 6-point moments now. And there, actually, I found that sure, the 3-point looks very nice, and the derivative of the 3-point parameter is well understood. But the 6-point grows faster than the 3-point does. So the cumulative information you get in lensing, that particular case I looked at, does not increase substantially. It does increase, but not by, again, we're talking about the 20% level, yes. But surprisingly, not by, even though you'd think, of course, this doesn't mean that, and we only looked at, certain what's called variance skewness on various scales. There are many other configurations you could think of doing. We didn't do the exhaustive one, and one could try to do that. But it doesn't go up as quickly as we had hoped.
So I wanted to basically ask the same question, but to continue on the same theme, right? For larger scale structure, there's a lot of information that, I haven't tried with lensing, but I've tried with larger scale structure. There's a lot of information that you can get from, say, my spectrum. Spectrum. So it's true that the power spectrum loses information, but because of the coupling of modes. But the same coupling of modes is the one that then show up in the higher order, which you can use to constrain some of the thing that will limit your analysis on the power spectrum anyway. So it's not necessarily, so again, it depends how one poses the problem.
Yes, I mean, I know that it worked well for you on 2DF, that you did manage to get the triangle configurations which project out certain nonlinear effects like bias and the like. So they're, I mean, because it's a high-dimensional correlations are very large spaces, but I think it's important to try to quantify, you know, what you really need to do to quantify how much information there is go and get to 6 point. I mean, again, you don't need the full 6 point, but if you want to add up how much information there is now at the high moment, then I think that's the next step that one should ask is, you know, how much more is there for the FNL? The answer is, it's not a lot. But that's a small effect, so that's not the same, not a fair comparison. And I think for each of these things, I think it would be interesting to actually calculate. And many of these things are trackable, some of them are not, to calculate how much you gain moment by moment.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a comment that this is, sorry. So I think, I mean, of course, there's more information in these higher modes, but what you're doing when you have nonlinear collapse, that you have a structure on linear scale that collapse to a small object. So all the information that you had on these larger scales collapse to something smaller that could potentially be beyond your resolution. So basically that's no matter how many correlation functions, how many endpoint correlation functions you look at, the process of gravitational collapse takes information from a scale that you could have potentially observed to a scale that you cannot observe. So I think that basically explains that thought too. That's basically.
But
how
small scale
would you go? So you go from basically, the factor of 10 collapse, basically. So that's you go from delta of 1 to delta of about 1,000 when you collapse something. So basically, that's where you have a gap in information. All your information goes to small objects. And if you don't resolve those scales, then you lose your information. That information.
I think the saturation was happening. I mean, where the nonlinear scale sits in is not exactly where you
believe. But since I think between 10 megaparsec and 1 megaparsec, is that where? This factor is, or I mean, I don't know how it translates to K, but I think like 1/, yeah. If you think 1/k is the scale, it's like less than 10 megaparsec and 1/ms. So,
I over K, yeah.
Well, I mean, there is no one-to-one correspondence, but yeah. So I think that's just what happened. You have collapse, and basically, so you have, the information goes to a smaller scale that you don't resolve anymore if you have a finite at a K max, and that's it.
Other questions for Wadey? Okay, let's thank him again.